Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is TWiG, This Week in Google, episode 13 for October 24th, 2009. This is the droid you're looking for. This Week in Google is brought to you by GoToAssist Express, the easy way to provide instant tech support to your customers remotely. Support smarter with GoToAssist Express. For a free 30-day trial, go to GoToAssist.com/TWiG. And by Carbonite, the leader in online backup. Backup your PC or Mac off-site securely and automatically. For a free trial offer, plus 2 free months with purchase, go to Carbonite.com, offer code TWIT. It's time for This Week in Google, TWiG, we call it, with the TWiG crew, starting with Gina Trapani of SmarterWare.org. Hi, Gina.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
Going great. I hear you were recognized in Disneyland.
Yes, a TWiG viewer recognized me in Disneyland, which was the first time ever that I've been recognized anywhere. So that was exciting.
Where were you when you...
Gina, did that viewer wave at you?
He did not. He just said, "Hey, aren't you Gina from TWiG?" And he was really cool about it. And I was kind of like, "Who, me? What?" And then we shook hands. In fact, I think if I remember correctly, his name was Dean. So hi, Dean. And I thanked him for making me feel like a rock star.
That's so neat. Here also is a rock star, Mr. Jeff Jarvis of BuzzMachine.com.
Hey, Leo.
Two of the top blogs in the world with Buzz Machine and Smarterware. And ironically, as you were observing, you don't get indexed by Google News because you're a single author blog.
I've even complained about that to the Google News team, and we don't get anywhere with that. So is John Battelle even, and he's gotten nowhere.
I guess they have to draw the line somewhere. But
why is that the line?
Right.
Right.
What would you suggest? Who would decide that?
Well, people suggested on Twitter that I should it's like trying to go in the diamond lane with the pull-up doll.
Oh, yeah.
Make up some authors.
You need an inflatable author.
Yes.
Very simple. Very simple. That laugh is the great Danny Sullivan, who's joining us from SearchEngineLand.com. Hi, Danny.
Hi.
Danny's been an observer of the search engine scene, not just Google, but going all the way back to 96 with Lycos and Alta Vista and Yahoo.
Yes.
And really an astute observer. In fact, one of the things that spurred me to get you on today is to talk a little bit about this new social search, Google social search that, not just Google, Bing's doing it too.
Yeah.
And you have a great article on that. We'll talk about that in a bit. But before we get to that, I do want to, I left something out last week and I really would like to talk about it this week, especially with the new announcement of Droid, Android 2.0. Verizon took a big shot at Apple. With its, what is it now? Get Droid. What is the website? Droid.
DroidDoes.com.
Which doesn't load on an iPhone.
It doesn't? There's one more tagline. This ad doesn't. So if you go to DroidDoes.com, which actually redirects to a Verizon Wireless site, you'll see all the things that the iPhone does not do that the Droid does. Droid is a new Motorola phone that is running Android 2.0. So, what do you think, Gina? I mean, have you seen 2.0?
I've only seen screenshots. BoyGenusReport.com has been doing some fantastic coverage of Android 2.0. And, you know, what to say? I mean, it looks really cool. There's Microsoft Exchange support. There's Facebook friend integration into your contacts, which seems really cool. There seems to be, there's a car-specific home screen. So if you have the phone with you while you're driving, you get, the kinds of apps and maps and interface that you would need if you needed directions or need to look up businesses on your way. There's a unified email inbox, which I'm not really sure what they mean by that, but
well, you know what would be nice that the iPhone doesn't do is put all of my mail into one inbox. I have to go to my Google box and then to my Yahoo box and then to my other boxes. Mm-hmm. A unified inbox would be great.
It would be. And if they could do things like even kind of intersperse your SMS messages and all the different ways the messages that we get into one kind of flow, that would be awesome. But it looked really cool. I definitely would suggest Android fans to check out that Boy Genius Report screenshot tour, which we have in the show notes.
Continuing in the line of pastries, this is eclair. Cupcake was the last one. Donut,
yes.
Cupcake, and now eclair.
But let's just say that commercial is scary and weird.
Really?
It's very
aggressive because it's essentially saying all the things that the iPhone doesn't do. It really is underscoring things like closed development.
Right.
And it says Droid does. And I think it's effective. I think it's very smart. It's surprising given that Verizon thought they were going to get the iPhone. At least I thought that's what they thought they thought were going to get.
Right. I really like the first part of the commercial, the I don't parts.
Right.
We talked about the best way for Android to market the
seven style graphics.
Yeah, I don't like the transition.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, you
that
know,
is scary.
Show me something better. It went from the happy, you know, Apple song with the reflection and all that, but then it kind of transitions into this like scary. Yeah, exactly. I don't want my phone to kill me.
I talked to someone whose dad works for Verizon, who has held the phone, has shown the phone to others. Take it with a grain of salt. It does come from Verizon, but his dad said, this is the iPhone killer. This is an amazing phone. 5-megapixel camera. It's got a real keyboard that slides out, but not much thicker than an iPhone. Looks like a screen the same size as the iPhone. I presume it's a capacitance touch screen.
It seems to be getting really great early reviews. My only problem is, I mean, I'm a fan. I love Android, and I can't keep all the carriers and models and makers straight.
Welcome to the world of cell phones. It's a nut.
Yeah. You want that Android club, damn it. Let's start it.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I'm
buying this one, so I'll hand off my last Android phone. But I'm definitely going to get in line for this one. This looks like it's going to be a spectacular phone.
When does it come out?
No one knows, although if you look at that strange, weird graphic at the end there, it has a binary calendar at the bottom, which some have interpreted to be, I think, October 31st. Is that right, Gina? This month.
I thought it was November 9th, but you're probably right. Soon. Soon, yeah.
Soon. And, well, I don't read binary, so it might, who knows?
I didn't know about the binary calendar,
Yeah,
though.
Well, that's, if you look at the bottom, that's what that looks like, yeah. You're probably too scared.
They are, Google.
Yeah.
I was hiding for my life.
You were terrified. I can't look at that. Here's the real question. I mean, you can put all that hardware together. You can put a great operating system. It does sound like 2.0 is cool. Doesn't it come down, though, to the application store?
Hmm.
At least if you're going to compete against an iPhone.
This is a good question. Yeah, I mean, I think the apps have a lot to do with it. And I think, you know, if you're talking about the iPhone, music and video is also a really big part of it. You know, the iPhone iTunes integration is really good. I mean, I got an iPod Touch because it was just like I was so set up in iTunes that it was hard for me to make the transition.
A Microsoft phone will never, ever make sense to a human being.
Right. Well, we know that
right?
much.
It's impossible. No matter how many good apps you can put on a Microsoft OS, it will not. I can't find them. I can't get to them. I have two or three, you know, Microsoft OS phones, and they're dreadful.
Yeah. Here's the binary clock. I'll just zoom in on this. Can you read binary, or is that Klingon?
I don't know what that is.
I like that if you go down below that, they actually have a disclaimer telling you that Droid's a trademark of Lucasfilms.
Of Lucasfilms, yeah.
Well,
yeah,
that's going to be a problem.
I mean, Droid's kind of generic, but something's going on there where they decided, well, we better make sure we don't get anybody from, you know, Lucasfilms after us. Or maybe there'll be some more surprises and we'll discover that the Droid is somehow going to have some connection.
It says used under license, so they obviously got permission to use it. Well, that's interesting. Wouldn't it be cool if it like had Wookiee fur cases and...
I want to hear the Wookiee ring.
And of course, we're going to see an ad from Apple saying, "This is not the droid you're looking for."
Yeah. Well.
If I were Steve Jobs, that's what I would do.
Yeah.
So a big announcement this week started with Bing. It kind of perturbed me a little bit. Twitter announced that it had sold its fire hose, all the data that comes out of Twitter, something it does not give away easily or lightly, and many have asked for, to Bing for indexing. Bing is also going to index Facebook. And then Google said, Marissa Meyer said, oh, no, we're doing it too. We're calling it Google Social Search. Both search engines. So this is a good one for you, Danny. Both search engines. Is it real-time search? What exactly are we talking about here?
Well, that's part of the problem. We talk about real-time search, and I try to explain it like if we were saying we're going to do image search and you do a search, you get images. If you were talking video search and you do a search, you get videos. So if I say we're having real-time search,
we're searching for
do you get? Real time? I mean, that's...
For a real good time. Yeah, right.
And so the way I've seen it, when we look at the different players, it's either somebody tried to let you see the kind of microblogged real-time content that's out there, the actual tweets where somebody may be saying what's going on, or they try to mine the links that are being tweeted or being Facebooked or whatever you want to call it that's put out there. And so with Bing, they kind of went both ways. They said, all right, if you want to see what people are saying, we're going to try to show you the most authoritative tweets, and we'll also show you the most tweeted links that are out there as well. Google's social search is actually different and independent of the whole deal they cut with Twitter. They actually were working on that before they had a deal with Twitter. And I've actually seen it, and it's one of those things where I looked at it and I thought, well, that's actually really cool. You know, it'll see all your followers that are, for example, on Twitter. You do a search, and it will show you at the bottom of the page all the pages related or written by the people you follow, because it can figure out. It knows who you are. It knows who they are, and it can see who they've said, which are their websites. And it's kind of neat. It like super personalizes some of your pages, which Jamie, actually has nothing to do with real. What's that?
Sorry. Can I put? Is it just Facebook followers, or is it my email contacts, my fellow employees? What pools of people can I set the search against?
On the social search, it'll tie into anybody you've indicated on your social profile. So
it's your Google profile that it's using.
In Google, you have a profile, and on the profile, you can say, "Hey, this is my Twitter account." You could say, "This is my LinkedIn account." And if Google can get to that account and then see the people who are listed as your friends, and then in turn find them, and they've listed what their websites are, then it can use that as sort of a greater network. Now, maybe they'll get more explicit with it down the line, where you can actually go through and pick out individual people. But Twitter is a very good way it starts off. It can pretty flawlessly go through and say, if you say this is my Twitter account, look at all those people, find the blogs that they say that they own and operate, and refine the results that way.
It's another reason to get your Google profile in a shape, because it's going to be drawing information from here.
Well, and that's, you know, there's another reason they want to kind of try to get you to do that, because they haven't had a whole much luck in getting people to do much of social on Google. So,
hey, I just went to my profile. I noticed that there's a new tab in there. There was About Me, and now there's a Side Wiki tab. This shows what I've written in my Side Wiki.
They seem to be integrating Google profiles with all the new products. Wave, your profile in Wave is pulled solely from your Google profile, your profiles.google.com page too. Okay. So they're really pushing it.
Well, they need to if they're going to make a utility and give it some usefulness, right?
Yeah.
By the way, for the Twitter stuff, so they've got the social search that they kind of put out there because, you know, they've got something in development. They may still go ahead and do an actual Twitter search. Down the line, you may actually be able to go to Google and search just Twitter stuff specifically, not just tied to your friends. But we're waiting to see what they'll do with that. They just kind of really kind of said, look, we got a deal too.
Well, in the blog post, they kind of talked about, well, if there's a, I don't know, if there's a snowstorm coming, you could do a search and you'd see all the tweets about it. Or if there's a traffic jam, you do a search. So it sounded like there would be a search of the fire hose in addition to a search of your friends, both of which have value.
But what upset me, I'm glad to have it there, but two things bothered me about the announcements. The first is that Twitter and Facebook with Bing are presumably selling content that is not theirs, it's ours.
Right.
And that as various folks, including Gina and Dave Weiner, have asked, if Twitter were instead of the cloud, there'd be an API, and you could just search it. It wouldn't be a case of making a deal like that to one person and not the other. Though Ev has said that he intends to make this not competitive and open, which I hope and assume he'll do. The second thing that bothers me is that it sets a terrible precedent, because these, I'll say it, idiot newspaper people, Danny writes about this week, we'll hear about in a few minutes, who will now say, well, Google, you pay Twitter, you should pay us. And of course, it's entirely different, but it's going to confuse the hell out of their little brains.
You can't handle the truth. So I actually tweeted that, and that I thought this is the problem with silos, is that it isn't global. In fact, we've had this conversation with Twitter before. My friends Ken Shepherdson and Dustin Salings were saying they were doing a track service, and they said we would like the fire hose. We could add some real utility to it. We'll eat the bandwidth. And Twitter really kind of dithered and said, yeah, send me an email. But you don't want it. It's really big. And Dustin said, I can handle it. And I wasn't clear whether Twitter thought this was a monetization strategy. I don't think so
from what I've heard. I don't know what Facebook is versus Twitter. And I know Tinker.com has had the fire hose for a while.
Only a few have. Yeah. So did Gnip. But you had to kind of get permission. And I think that's the point, is that this should be kind of an open – this information should be open. We're all contributing it to Twitter. A number of people said, well, if you don't like it, don't use Twitter. I don't think that's the answer either.
But, I mean, the data is – I mean, there's an API available, right? And the data is accessible to everyone. I mean, we're talking about it's limited, right? We're talking about access to the fire hose, which is all the data streaming real time, which is an incredible
– You can only get a certain number of updates an hour if you use the API.
Right. You can only get it – right. And so, basically, they whitelist certain companies to get – to make, you know, huge amounts of requests.
Well, your Twitterlytics program, it runs into that API limit, right?
Mm-hmm.
You would like the fire hose. I mean, you may not want it from a technical point of view, but that would be valuable to you, wouldn't it?
Right. Yeah. I mean, the fire hose is valuable, but I think that like the bandwidth and I don't know. I do think that Twitter should be distributed, and I don't like the idea that everybody's tweets are centralized on Twitter servers. That said, I do think that Twitter's been really generous about opening up access to the data, and I don't think they're withholding the fire hose access because they're trying to hold on to the data. I think it's just a scaling issue. I don't know. It's just a guess.
What Dustin proposed is, well, just if you have a bandwidth issue, send one copy of your fire hose to somebody who's willing to mirror
well,
it.
This is the issue, right? Because on the mailing list, the Twitter API mailing list, that I believe does break Twitter's terms of service.
Right.
So you can't create a distributed network of nodes, all you know, who request as much data as they can handle and then exchange it between one another peer to peer. And this is what we'd need to distribute it. And this is the thing that I think I am definitely in favor of doing.
What's the deal with Facebook? And did Facebook not do Google only Bing? And what's the deal with Facebook and Bing? Do we know?
Well, I mean, Facebook and Bing, my understanding was they didn't say Facebook, Sheryl Sandberg said they didn't actually get any money for giving the data up to them. So, which was probably
and Twitter implied that they did.
It sounds like, which sure love to know what the terms were, because what did you get from this thing that everybody thinks is incredibly valuable? We don't even know that like an ad deal was cut off of it. But on Facebook, it's harder because, you know, I think people still don't quite realize that they're putting some of this stuff out in public. You have to actually change it and say you want to put it out in public or whatever. But I think Facebook was kind of sensitive to the idea that they don't want to suggest that they're just selling people's information.
Always the issue with Facebook, although they said that they would modify their user interface to give you a chance. I mean, already you can say everyone. You can have an everyone setting for your status updates and your photos and so forth. They said they would surface that more and make that more clear so that you could choose to have your data be part of that search.
But can you go to a Facebook profile and not be logged into Facebook and see that profile?
No.
Even if you've made it public?
Oh, no, yes. Yeah, somebody can make it public.
You could set it up that way, yeah.
Yeah. You'll see like some information about it, like some people's
information.
Friends.
No, you can choose to make everything. I'm pretty sure you can choose to make everything available. You go through, you have your limited profile, your public profile. And that's where that everyone setting is.
And I think one of the twin things here is over the past 2 years, Facebook has opened up more and more of their information, in particular to get traffic from Google. More of this stuff is out there, the events, the forums, the profile pages, because it brings them in traffic. And so when you look at why, for example, Twitter would do this, Twitter's been under pressure that, well, you're flattening off. People aren't coming to the website. We're not seeing enough information that's out there. So when they do deals with Bing and they do deals with Google, on the one hand, you could say, well, they're giving away their most valuable information. But on the other hand, they're putting this stuff out in these huge traffic drivers. And if that starts sending people back to the Twitter website, they may feel like this is a good way to show that they still have growth going on.
Well, but I think the Twitter website at some point becomes irrelevant.
I hope so.
And so one has to hope that they're, I mean, you know, they're still looking for the business model. Hello, business model.
Right.
Yeah.
It's here somewhere. I saw it a minute ago.
I think this is the first company that's built for the post-page internet. They just don't know what it means yet.
Mm. It's certainly valuable. I mean, the idea that, you know, somebody dies or some event happens, you know, there's a boy in the balloon, to be able to see that real time, and Google's been moving towards that with that sidebar thing that they do, you know, in the last hour, the last day, the last week. Right. But it's not really very valuable unless you have some sort of stream of information like Twitter or Facebook that you're watching.
And that you do something to have more relevancy than the last thing that was posted is the first thing at the top of the page.
Yeah, curate it somehow. How do you do that, though? I mean, that sounds like a human.
That's where you go and you look at what Bing's saying that they're trying to do, which is look at the person who's tweeting, look at the amount of times they've been retweeted, try to get some sense of the authority of the person putting the information out there as well as the authority of the tweet itself. When I did a couple tests on it, it didn't really live up to the promises yet. It's still a beta, so we'll see how it goes. But I was still seeing spam. I was still seeing, you know, misleading stuff that was showing up there. But yeah, that is the challenge. How do you play with the different signals you can get to see if you can come up with, if you will, some kind of a Twitter rank to know which Twitter is actually the most important thing.
And at the same time, a tinker is trying to cluster the tweets, Google News or Daylife, where I'm a partner, are trying to do. And it's really hard to analyze something 140 characters long, and it's going to take a while. But I think the more they can tie that to what's being linked to, what's in a conversation, you can at least, maybe you're not getting to the authority that Danny's talking about, but you're getting to at least clusters of smarter views of what truly hot topics really are and what's within those. What are the links within those? What are people talking about?
Authority is really the issue, and how do you measure it?
When Matt Cutts was on a couple weeks ago, Leo, when you were in Dubai, he was saying that he felt like Google PageRank works on Twitter just as well, because people who get retweeted, you know, those things are links, inbound links. And that, so you can tell authority, you know, not based on Twitter's internal metrics, like how many followers people have and how many times they've been retweeted and how many lists they're on or whatever the popularity metric of the week is, that PageRank actually does scale to those because things get linked.
I think authority breaks down in a real-time world. It's not as effective as the blog world, where you have time to stew and get more links and accumulate links. If you don't get retweeted right away.
But don't you always, when you get retweeted, it happens pretty instantly, doesn't it, though? I mean, I find that response to my tweets is basically within the first hour.
That could be a measure more of how many people follow you and how engaged your followers are in what you're saying. In other words, it's an authority, but it's authority, it's a very kind of, this is Mr. Tweet said this to me. He said, it depends, you know, your kids are authoritative to you, Jeff. I mean, what Jake says is authoritative, but completely unauthoritative to everybody. I guess if everybody's
reading. That's why one size fits all doesn't work.
Right.
And that's why I think things like Twitter lists become interesting, because you start to cluster people around topics, and then that starts to establish a new authority when you understand what the topic is. Fred Wilson, who invested in Twitter, was tweeting about this and wondering whether the Twitter list was the new follower. I disagreed. I think it's more like the new blog role. Or what I really want is tags. I want to tag Gina in a list of people who are really authoritative about technology and other things, different from Jay Rosen about journalism, different from somebody else about politics.
But they might be in the same list, so they're subdivided in that list by tags.
Or they're in somebody's different lists, and as you start to see who's associated with whom, you now start to see who's retweeting whom, who's associated with whom, who's quoting whom, who's writing about what. It's the same exact kind of structure the blogs have tried to do for quite some time. Who's in a constellation? And once you have that, you may not have authority per se, but you might have, sense of topicality.
Yeah. I think lists, it's really interesting how the ecosystem can be changed so dramatically by something so simple. I mean, I think lists changes everything on Twitter.
It's a whole nother number to obsess about.
It is.
Initially.
Yeah, I said that. I didn't know that Fred said it, but I said it as well, that forget the follower number. It's now how many lists you're on that matters. Of course, it doesn't matter yet because everybody doesn't have lists. But once everybody gets lists, that's going to be a big number.
I should save this for the wish list time, but that's all I have. I look at people who are at conferences and stuff, and they have a hashtag for the conference, but I come in halfway in, and I wonder, where are they?
Right.
And I can't figure out where that is. I wish we had a simple little nomenclature that says something like hashtag set, hashtag what you're using for the conference, so that you can go look up and see, what is this hashtag mean? Why did somebody put it in there?
It's really there's two things here at work: taxonomy and authority, and they're both really important.
Yeah,
and they're related. They're interrelated because authority within the taxonomy is important.
But it's a folksonomy.
It's a folksonomy, exactly.
That's what you're saying. I know you're not disagreeing. We're not disagreeing. But I think that's the important thing: is how do you make it emergent?
Right. Right.
Rather than determined.
Folksonomy is a taxonomy that's determined by people ad hoc as it goes. Is that
emerges?
Yeah, yep. Emerges.
Jeff, have you tried Brizzly?
Love Brizzly.
No, you got me, Gina.
I'm a Brizzlier.
It's a Twitter interface. It's a web-based Twitter interface. It's basically like the Twitter website, just better. And one thing that it has on the sidebar is that it lists all the current trending topics on Twitter. And then there's a little link that says why. And you click on that, right, and you get an explanation of like why this topic exists. And it sounds like that's what you're interested in for all hashtags. Like hashtags for my friends, why, what do they mean?
And the why is a wiki why, because anybody can add to the why.
I need that
why
button for life, I think.
Yeah, why? Yeah. The why button is so fun. I love
you
the
and
why.
Me both.
I have an app on my iPhone. I could just hit it any time and say, why?
Why?
Brizzly is very cool. We'll send you an invitation, Jeff.
Thank you.
Yeah, because I think it's still invite only.
Yeah, it is. I just looked at it.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel left out.
I guess I can. It says, oh, I can. You know, that's right. You can't invite somebody, right, Gina? You have to tweet about it. People are getting it. The social engineering going on now is just stunning.
Yeah, yeah. I love Brizzly. I didn't love that part.
Okay. All right. I'm going to, Jeff, quickly go to my Twitter account.
Okay.
I'm going to tweet this. Invite Jeff. Jump. All right, ready? 1, 2, 3. Yes, tweet this. We'll see how long it lasts. The last time I did it, they lasted about 3 seconds.
Oh, it's nice you pay tribute to Soupy Sales.
Yeah, I love Soupy Sales. Grew up with Soupy Sales. And I think
Gina
a lot
has
of...
no idea what we're talking about.
You don't know who Soupy Sales is? Well, I'll give you a hint. Probably the only, you know, you'd only know by seeing old kinemascopes in black and white. That's how long ago Soupy Sales was on TV.
I am Wikipediaing it right now.
Yeah, you'll find some on YouTube. It's an interesting kind of goofy sense of humor. Jeff, you and I were probably kids when Soupy Sales was at his heyday.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why we still have a soft spot for him and Fang.
There I am. Thank you, Leo.
Good. That's one way to do it. All right, we're going to take a break, come back with more at with our guests. What a great team here. Of course, Gina and Jeff, always the greatest. But Danny Sullivan is also here of SearchEngineLand.com, a guy who's been an observer in this scene 13 years. Wow, Danny. That's pretty amazing. We'll talk more. I want to talk more about all this stuff. But first, a word from our friends at Citrix, the folks who do those fabulous programs, Go to My PC, Go to Meeting. And for those of you who are in the support business, Go to Assist Express. Have you heard about this one? This is fantastic. I think it was it Colleen that was just using this a second ago? You thought it was great, didn't you? It's amazing. So here's the thing. You got to assist somebody, you know, phone support kind of thing, and that's painful. You don't ever want to have to do this. And you know, there's a great video of John Meyer, the, you know, Your Body is a Wonderland guy. Somebody got him in a cell phone video of him talking to his dad on the phone. He's like outside the concert hall. He's going, "No, Dad, no. Okay, it's under the Apple. It's system preferences. Okay, Dad, no, no, don't click that. No." And at the very end, he says, "Dad, no, don't give up. You can do this." And I really felt for him. I know how that was. And I tell you, if I had a coupon code to send him then, I would have sent it to him for Go to Assist Express. I'm going to send it to you right now. You go to gotoassist.com/twig, T-W-I-G, and you can sign up for 30 days free. So they're using all their great remote access software, but they're using it for support professionals. Now, individuals can use this. They have a day pass, so if you've got the need for it, you can use it. But really, it's aimed at the support pro. There's some features that make it particularly useful for you. For instance, unattended support. You know, normally with a remote access, the other guy's got to be there. With this, once you set it up, you can get into their machine at any time and do the work. You can have 8 sessions at once. And at any time anybody's done support, you know, you start an install or you start a scan. Now what? You sit there, you read a book? No, you go to the next one and the next one and the next one. It makes you much more efficient. It has another feature I really like. It has an assay of what operating system is running on the remote machine, what security software, all the programs running in the background. That'll save you a lifetime of trouble. Really a fantastic solution. I want you to try it free for 30 days. Go to goto Assist. Go to assist.com/twig. Secure 128-bit encryption, 24/7 support. The easiest, the best. If you want to start a support session, you just send them a link, or you can get on chat and you say, here, go here. It couldn't be easier. Go to assist.com/twig. We thank them so much for their support of This Week in Google. Googly. You must have been a kid. I'm looking at you, Danny. You must have been a kid when you started Search Engine Watch way back when.
Oh, I wish I were a kid.
What was the motive? First of all, I mean, 1996, there's barely even blogging at the time.
Yes, we didn't have blogs. So, I'd have been a blogger back then, but we didn't.
Oh, it's just a web page about search engines?
We had web pages.
Isn't that funny? But you were essentially blogging.
Yeah, I mean, that was it. You know, I had left newspapers, did web development for a year, had clients who couldn't understand why they weren't showing up on search engines, and so really started looking into the whole situation on how they operated and published everything that I had found out as something I called a webmaster's guide to search engines. And it had both tips that you needed to know and also look at the marketplace, because at the time we had so many search engines and some of them were incredibly difficult to submit to. You know, you could spend hours literally filling out these forms that they wanted you to do. So I wanted to know the important ones. So just kind of carried on with that, and it took off. You know, it became my new career, the new beat that I was following, and it was a lot of fun. But it was just web pages. I didn't, you know, I use WordPress today. I wish I'd had stuff like that then. I was writing on Front Page and pushing stuff across on FTP.
You didn't have a content management system? You were just hand coding the pages?
Not at first.
Oh my God.
Writing it all up and pushing it across. Well, I mean, Front Page was a nice, actually good content management system. You could do everything locally. I worked off of a modem until 2004. I lived in a little village in Britain. So we didn't have broadband. So
wow.
It was a real treat when I finally got that. It was nice.
So you're a patient man, which is a required trait for a blogger, by the way. You have to be very patient. And you obviously are.
Wow. I mean, that's amazing. What a story. That's wonderful. As I remember, we would check in with it to see. I mean, Watch had some of the implication of Watchdog too, didn't it?
Well, that was it. And at the time when I'd started, we had a number of watch sites that had begun. There was BoardWatch, and I think there was Internet Watch. And so,
right.
You know, I thought, well, okay, I'll slap Watch on the end of the name, and then that'll fit in with the whole kind of thing. Clearly today I should have called it Crunch or something, but, you know, along with that stuff. So, but yeah, so just carried on with it from there.
Crunch makes no sense, by the way. I never understand all these crunch sites now.
Well, they, you know, the brand gets built up, and, you know, I suppose the idea of the watch type of thing, you know, kind of fits in with it, but, you know, you get these different things, you get slapped onto the end of words, and they make them distinguished in some way, I suppose.
Twitter, were you surprised by this Twitter deal, this real-time deal, when it came across?
A bit on the timing. I hadn't really thought, Web 2.0 is coming up. They'll probably finally roll this stuff out.
Right.
As part of that.
Because you knew about the social search.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, the social search independent of Twitter, they were able to do that with just the stuff they could see in the public. That's not really real time. That's tapping into your social network. The real time aspect may be something completely new that'll come.
Right.
But that the timing that it was announced on that particular day was a surprise. That Google, you know, a couple hours later managed to get their own deal together to say, oh, we have one too, was definitely a surprise. I thought they'd probably have to take a couple more days to hammer out whatever it was they needed to finish doing.
Right.
Made for an exciting day.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
Another announcement this week, Wolfram Alpha has an API, but it's paid.
Paid, oh. Mondo paid.
Yeah, for $50 you can get the iPhone app. I don't understand that at all. I mean, you could still use the web page for free. Has anybody had the initiative to buy the iPhone app just to see what you get?
I've got it. I'll try to get it up in a minute. I couldn't get it to work. I had a demo thing that they sent across, and
I'm very curious. I mean, what could you get for $50? I mean, that's such a steep price.
You get an app on your phone.
Cheaper than a scientific calculator.
I don't know if you can see that.
Oh, look at that. What, it looks like a keyboard. What is that?
Yeah, it is. It's like got a little search box on it, and it's got a huge keyboard underneath with a lot of both numbers and letters, which I think is probably designed for some of the mathematicians that they think they want to use.
So, as Jeff said, it's kind of a knowledge calculator.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, I think that they, who knows? I mean, I think they, it is in the same way that Wolfram on the site itself is. I think that they figure that you're going to have some people who are really into the kind of data that they can use that aren't going to think twice about paying $50.
Right.
And which is an interesting change because the website was designed to be more, hey, anybody should be able to use this. So, and in the time since they launched that site, I think it's fair to say it hasn't really taken off. You know, you, at one point you had people talking about it as being a Google killer, this huge revolution, just kind of sitting there.
It's too difficult to figure out. I mean, I almost wish I would just could take, you know, a few days and think of and kind of start to understand how to make queries. If you know how to make queries, it's very valuable.
Well, that's why an API would be powerful on top of it, is you could take something that's complicated, like, I don't know, Wave and Wolfram Alpha, and create engines that would be usable for us mortals.
That makes sense.
But if the API is expensive, it's going to limit the use of the API.
If you want 50,000 requests, it'll cost you $2,100 and a nickel a request after that.
Holy crap. Excuse my reaction. That's nutso.
And 50,000 requests isn't that much.
No.
No.
Oh.
And we're used to making mistaken requests and going back at it.
Seriously. I can't tell you how many times I locked myself out of Twitter developing my Twitter app.
If you wanted a personal use plan, that would be 1,000 requests. That would be $60, and then Jesus. After that, 8 cents a request. And I don't know, is that for a year? I don't know what the term is.
Company?
Yeah. Well, they have to pay for all this stuff.
1,000 requests a day, an hour?
Month. That's a monthly plan.
That's and all crazy. You get in the end is knowledge that is already somewhere on the internet or somewhere in a book.
I'm sorry, I take it back. The personal plan is that you buy a block of requests, and when you use up 1,000, you buy another one. The developer and business plans are monthly.
I think I'd spend my time figuring out how I could scrape the website from different IP addresses to not have to pay.
You get the same data, right? It's not like...
I shouldn't say
Some of the data is not from the web. It's from books and things like that. But still...
If you scrape Wolfram Alpha, you just write an interface to Wolfram Alpha. You could do it.
Huh. I should say, I think Wolfram Alpha is really cool.
But I love it.
And Danny's point actually is really interesting. I mean, the sell, right, was that this data should be available not just to hardcore researchers. It should be available to anyone. But then they're charging $50 for an iPhone app.
For a price.
Yeah, exactly. Although I guess that's not, you know, much more than some desktop software. So I don't know. I guess it depends
if you're a mathematician and you know Mathematica and you do these sorts of things, this might be a great, you know,
useful
calculator type for you. To use. I'm not, so it makes nothing to me. I did another thing where you've got, I don't know if you can see it again, but one of the examples they were putting in there, sorry, I got to go this way, is like Big Mac calories, and it's what you get on the web. You go up there, and it'll tell you how many calories you've got along, 453 or whatever. God, that's a lot of calories. But I could do that. I think I can do that just launching Safari and going to Wolfram Alpha on the web. Right. So if you're not doing the calculations, I don't think that you probably are going to want to make much use of this.
Yeah. It's an interesting. I mean, I guess they need money.
Well, but I think Danny's right. They need to package different versions of it, or they need to enable the API to be made in different things. And if it's just web knowledge like Big Mac calories, there's no resale market for that.
Right.
But this is also really common, though, for it's really common for companies that launch these new search products and they don't quite know what they're going to do, that where they end up at can be radically different. A classic example was Applied Semantics, and this was back in 1997, 98, and their whole goal was to try to help you search better with search refinement, all these things. It became AdSense. I mean, their product was actually called AdSense. Google launched their own AdSense product under a different name. They ended up buying Applied Semantics and bringing some of that technology in, but it was supposed to be this thing for like scientists and researchers, and it turned into an ad product, like, you know, radically different. So I think Wolfram is probably going to throw a lot of stuff against the wall and try to figure out what's going to stick, especially given the investment they put into it. And they may not know. And I think Wolfram actually said that at one point. He didn't quite know what might happen with this. So I'm sure we'll see even more evolutions of it going along.
Hmm. But at this point, I think you'd use some VC money to open it up and figure out what it is.
Right.
That's to me the issue. Is it is too soon to close up in a way that's going to lead to really interesting development?
You have an article in your blog, Jeff. Howard Stern 3.0, The Future of Entertainment.
Well,
that was a good one.
I was listening to Howard on my Sirius radio, and I'm a Howard fan this week because he's the other guy who talks about penises, you know.
And, yeah, it's you and Howard, the two of
that's
you.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I heard something, and because of my new Sirius radio, I could back it up like a TiVo and listen to it. I said, I got to hear that again. And Howard talked about what he could do tomorrow on the internet and how, obviously, we all know this, everybody could watch him, anybody could listen to him live. You could listen to him on the iPhone. And he said, and I wouldn't have to work for a company.
Yeah.
And so I thought I saw the future of
Howard.
And so then Tim Windsor came in the comments and said, well, that's Leo.
That's exactly what I'm doing. And the whole point of it was precisely I'd be my own company. I didn't want to have to work for anybody.
Right. Well, I think you should give Howard a tutorial.
I should give him a call. Howard, though.
I sent a post with that to Gary Delabate.
Yeah.
Have you ever talked to Howard or called him?
No, but I mean, I think it's really interesting that here's a guy who had, maybe 10 to 15 million listeners, went for the gold, partly because he was just fed up with the FCC and broadcast. So he took $500 million from Sirius and went from, we don't know, but went probably from 15 million listeners to fewer than a million listeners.
No. It's more than that because he brought in alone 8 million people.
Did he?
And okay. They can listen time and time again. So, the guessing is that it could be 4 or 5, but that's guessing.
It's still a big drop.
It's a big drop, but it's a lot of money and it's freedom. But on the internet again, I'm supposedly the guy who's against paid content, but I pay for Howard now. I would pay for Howard on the internet.
Right.
He would have a direct relationship with people. There'd be no middleman. He's you. And he wants to do video and he wants to do the exact things you're doing. And how much does your whole you have a deluxe Cadillac setup right now, right?
Yeah.
If you were to recommend to somebody to have
it's cigarette money for Howard. It's for well under $100,000 he could do this.
Yeah.
Well under.
I mean that's
easy
tip money for him.
Yeah. And we did $2.5 million in revenue this year.
That's awesome, Leo.
So there's money in this, and Howard, look, if you make $500 million, you probably don't need to work anymore.
Well, I think he was making that point too. He was complaining about Rush Limbaugh selling tacky chairs and t-shirts and stuff. And Gary Delabate was asking him and saying, "Well, if it's $1 million, Howard," and Howard was saying, "No, you don't need that. You don't want to rip off your listeners."
He's right. He's right.
And so
good
I think
Howard.
He's kind of preparing himself. Plus, my thought is that Sirius, he got some major proportion of that payment probably in stock.
Right.
And as a Sirius stockholder, I can tell you it's
not worth
bupkis.
Not worth a whole lot.
I'm very happy that my Google is up and my Amazon is way up. My Apple's doing well, but my Sirius is...
Well, it really is the future of broadcasting. It's funny because my motivation is very similar to his because... I'll tell you, everybody I ever met in radio, their dream was to own a radio station. And the reason was not because you make so much money owning a radio station, but because then you'd be the boss. Nobody would tell you what to do.
No fakakta programming director to tell you what to put on. Yeah.
It's a stupid motivation, frankly, but that's the motivation. And it was certainly what motivated me. I think it's very interesting. Hey, Howard, I'm sure he listens to Twig. Anytime, dude. Just come on over. I'll show you how we do it. It's simple.
That's the motivation for people who love it.
Yeah. Yes. You're exactly right.
The way, Leo.
It's your motivation too, Gina, right? It's all of our motivation. We want to do what we love. We don't want any limits on it. We don't want somebody saying, where's our TP6 report? We got to come to another meeting. We just want to do what we love.
Yeah, I do it just because I can't stand the idea of shutting up. and not writing.
Right.
I think I would explode. But there's a particular kind of personality.
I think it's in some ways, we've lived in a patronage system since Leonardo, where an artist can't create without a rich, wealthy patron. And mass media has really been an example of that. Jeff doesn't get to write unless, somebody at Time Life says he can write. I don't get to do a radio show unless somebody at Clear Channel says I can do a radio show. It really is a patronage system. And I don't know if artists know how to live in a world where they don't have to have patronage. Well, the only patrons are your consumers, are your listeners.
In the post. Sorry, have you seen Kickstarter?
No, what's that?
Yeah, it's Kickstarter is cool.
Kickstarter is fascinating. It's designed right now for artists and authors and journalists and such. But I think it's a fundamental economic change, because the idea is that you can go in there, and the guy who designed Obama's campaign went in there and said, if I raise $60,000, enough to pay for the first printing, we'll create the book. So I went in and I pre-ordered the book. You could Robin Sloan, who was at Current TV, who was an internet pioneer, is trying to write a novel right now. And he put an amount in there and said, if I get enough money, I'll write it. And so it's really rather like the 1% rule of Wikipedia. If enough patrons choose to support you, then you do it. And you do it for the whole world then.
This is amazing.
You might still sell it. And maybe the patrons get some benefit. And
now, how committed is this? Are you if you commit? I mean, what does a pledge mean?
You give them a credit card. That's it. If they do it, you're paying. But you know, you might be able to go to a movie lot to watch it being made, or go to the premiere or something like that. You've invested. It's like Spot.us for journalism. You've invested in this thing.
Jeez, I wish this had been around when I was trying to build Twit. This is fantastic.
Exactly. I talked to Fred Wilson, the VC, about it this week. He's the one who kind of clued me in on the bigger picture. And he was talking about somebody he knows who wants to start a kickboxing studio. And he can go to something like this and say, give me $1,000. You'll get free kickboxing for a year. But I'm pre-funded. I've basically gone to my customers preemptively and gotten the money in to fund the business without having to go to another damn middleman.
Yeah, it's like micro patronage, right? Like, didn't
like Kiva. It's like Kiva for patronage.
Yeah. Like Jason Kotke a few years ago, he said he kind of ran a micro patronage drive and said, hey, like, just give me $5-$10, and I'm trying to raise enough money so that I can support my blogging habit and make it a full time job for a year. And he did incredibly well. He already had a platform, but that's what Kickstarter does, is that gives you this platform to do that.
Right. See, I just kind of bootstrapped it, but it's the same idea. I mean, of course, I'm in a little bit different, because I'm in free media. So the money comes from advertisers as opposed to the audience.
Right.
Right, but I think you can do either here. I think you can start most anything this way.
I like this better. My plan when we started Twit was never to take advertising, just have a direct drive mechanism. You know, the people who listen to it pay for it.
And it's the ultimate consumer research. If people won't pony up, then, you
shouldn't
do
it. Wow, it's fascinating.
Isn't it?
Jeff, are you going to use Kickstarter to do a project?
I have this book that I wanted to do about saving newspapers, and my editor said, please, no, please don't propose that. No, don't do it. but I'm thinking I should Kickstarter to do it and just, thumb my nose and see what's what. The problem is I have to actually do it then.
Right.
It's like having
100 bosses.
Now, I'm looking at the front page, and I wonder how many, there's got to be many, 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 many more projects in here who never do get funded.
What's interesting, too, though, about that, also a notion of investment. So, Gina, I would invest in you writing, Android apps.
You bet.
Mm-hmm.
You bet.
And if you got enough money to say, okay, Gina says it's worth 3 weeks of my time to do this, I got enough money to do that, I'll put it up. I get the app free, or I get some tutorial from Gina, or I get some benefit, or you pay back your investors at some point.
Just neat.
Return the money. That's interesting. Yeah, I've been. Kickstarter is quite tempting, isn't it? It really does give you that license of like, all those things that I wanted to do. I bet this really could help me do it.
We live in exciting times, don't we?
We do.
Here's a new web page from Google. Google Freedom of Expression. It's a YouTube page. What's the idea behind this?
In honor of the Berlin Wall's fall, that's the German PR director from Google you're showing there, Kai Overbeck, I think his name is, and they wanted to open up a page about why freedom of expression matters. And I think that's great. Google and we all live on that. My smart-ass response to it is also, I wonder whether this is being seen in China.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, guarantee not.
It's kind of like a few years ago, they did a big thing on for their book service, and they talked about Banned Books Week and how bad that was, and it was the same sort of thing. So you're against banned books in the U.S., but we'll ban certain things in China.
Well, yeah, the double irony here, Danny, is that Chinese publishers are now going after Google for copyright.
What? Good luck. Good luck with that. Hope that works out for them. Jeez. Let's see here.
Should we talk about Raindrop?
Oh yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Drizzle.
I've been waiting for that, Gina.
Drizzle.
What is raindrop?
So Mozilla, which is my other kind of cloud company love, is launching a new product called Raindrop, which is interesting. There are two interesting things to note about it, and it's not available yet, right? So there's just demo videos out there. The first one is that it's a web application. So it's not Firefox, it's not Thunderbird, it's not an installable app, right? Which is different for Mozilla. It's a web app. And what it does, I mean, it's kind of trying to solve the same problem that Google Wave is, but in a different way. And this seems to be like the 2009, sell for new messaging apps is, what email would be, what email should be, or a better email. This has been going on for a while, but I think Wave really kind of brought it along. Raindrop is basically, it's a messaging application. So Google Wave takes email and says this should be document, it's really document collaboration. That's really what you're doing. But Raindrop is saying, no, we want to give you an easier way to manage your messages. So what it does, the premise is that, your mom sends you an email, and that email shouldn't get pushed down by another message from some mailing list that you only browse. That there's a, messages should be prioritized differently based on who they're from and how important those people are to you. And that's the whole point of Raindrop. It's gonna integrate your messages from different platforms, Twitter, Facebook, your email, all the different places where you can get communications, and then it's going to smartly prioritize those based on how important they are to you. We've heard a few different companies and products have tried to solve this problem, and it really hasn't been solved yet. So it'll be interesting to see what Raindrop does. But there are a couple of design mock-ups on Flickr, and there are a few demo videos on Vimeo.
Isn't this kind of stuff really hard to do?
I think so. But I don't know. I mean, now that... If you use one unified app to interact, I think that it can figure out
there's
who
enough
the most
information.
Important contacts are. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, based on your activity.
I mean, it's something that Gmail ought to be able to do right now, right? I mean, or any inbox system that's looking at the people that you're already sending to a lot, it should be able to know, well, you send to this person a lot, so I'm going to make sure that's prioritized. And this is one of the things that Yahoo was talking about with their inbox, mm-hmm. that they were spending a lot of time saying, well, you'll be able to identify who your friends are, you'll be able to tag them this way, you'll tag them that way. And first I thought, well, I don't want to spend all that time. I just want you to do the work and figure it out magically and make it happen. So, if you just look at the contacts that are going along, you ought to be able to do it.
Yeah, I mean, Gmail already has like a most frequently contacted or suggested contacts. I forget what they call it. But if you go into your Gmail contacts, they do have by frequency list. So they should be able to do that. I mean, I think part of what Raindrop is saying is that, the way that we get notifications from different systems like Twitter and Facebook is that they send us email notifications. So like if Leo sends me a Facebook message, the message appears to be from Facebook, but it's actually from Leo. And I think the idea is that Raindrop would be aware of Leo's identity and be able to let me know, like, hey, this is Leo. This is just
across those things, consolidate your Google Reader, your Facebook, your Twitter, your email, everything.
Right.
And then algorithmically try to help prioritize it for you.
Right. It's the dream.
The irony
of the unified,
is that's exactly
smart,
what Marissa Myers was talking about. And listeners get mad at me when I say this again, but the hyper-personal news stream.
Right.
You clearly got both companies working on this. It wouldn't be hard for Google to bring together your Reader and your Gmail and your Twitter now and something else, and learn enough about you to preemptively try to prioritize.
In fact, it seems like this is something Google would be better at than anybody. I mean, they know more about us than anybody.
You've got Gmail already configured so that you can pull in from multiple email accounts. So, you can bring in your Yahoo Mail, you can bring in your Hotmail if you've got that account. You can bring all that stuff into one central inbox. If they had a way for them to actually... I mean, I get stuff sent to me on Facebook, and what's annoying to me is I've got enough inboxes to deal with, so most of my Facebook mail gets ignored.
Absolutely.
But if that was actually coming in through iMac or Pop or something like that as actual regular mail message, then that would kind of solve the issue of knowing that it really is you and who that person is as well.
But why not roll Google Voice into it as well? And why? I mean, you put my voicemail, my text messages in there. Put all contacts into that. Mm-hmm. And who's going to do that better than Google? I mean, Google's got all.
That'll be Wave.
No,
Wave will be Wave everything, and
Wave will take care of everything for you.
Is there a Wave backlash? You think people are starting to turn on Wave, aren't they?
I think they're just turning on us for talking about it all the time.
that could be it.
No,
well, it's
no,
a combination
no.
of the people feeling left out because they weren't invited,
right.
And also the just like WTF factor, which is like what is
I hear that most from people who got a Wave invite finally and said, oh. What is this?
Yeah, I got the, it's like the day after Christmas. I got the invite and I'm in. And
But I also think there's a little bit of not invented here going on of people, you know, you can turn into an old fart really early. And some of the people, I won't name names, who've complained about it, I think say, well, I invented the future of the internet. They can't do that.
Let me think who that would be.
I'm not saying a single syllable.
Who could you be thinking of? Let's see. We're going to get to our tips in just a second and our wines of the week or wish list, as Jeff prefers, because he's a positive guy. But before we do that, I do want to talk a little bit about backing up your data. This is, we haven't talked about Windows 7. Anybody want to say anything about Windows 7?
Oh, I got a copy.
I got a copy.
I bought a copy. It was exciting. I went into Fry's.
Look, he's got it in the bag. Ooh, wait a minute. We got
to
get
into the. I went into the Fry's just, I had time to go do some shopping and I walked in and.
You just bought it?
I had to ask somebody where it was.
Oh, geez.
And it really surprised me because I thought this is this big, huge rollout, right? And I expected a huge kiosk and I could hear them making announcements of come see the new demo and everything. So I thought it must have been a big failure. But then I actually found somebody and he showed me where it was and he said they'd been flying off the shelf. So
we had a party on Thursday. We had a Windows 7 house party.
Oh, yeah. I stopped in and checked it out. Yeah.
We even have a puzzle here that. We had a race between, because they kindly included a jigsaw puzzle. I can't really pick it up. It'll fall apart. But they kindly included a Windows 7 jigsaw puzzle. And we had a race to see if we could finish the puzzle faster than the install. And we did. So that was fun. That's the activities they were talking
about. I've got an old Windows Vista laptop that's just been sitting behind me for about a year and a half. So I thought maybe I'll get some use out of it now. Because it wasn't with Vista.
I really like it, actually. I really like it. The most of the reason I want Windows is so I could run Chrome, for crying out loud. Although, I guess we're getting Mac Chrome sometime soon.
Yeah, someday.
Yeah, it's coming. The dev version is pretty good.
Is that Chromium or is that something else?
It's okay.
Something else. So Chromium is from Wine, right?
It's a Chromium build for the Mac, which is available now.
Okay.
And I could be wrong, but I think that they fork the official releases of Chrome, you know, off of the Chromium project. And just somebody on Twitter just corrected me. Mike Chellen, thank you. There is code available for Raindrop. It's preliminary code. Oh. You have to check it out of a source code repository. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's the rock salt, you know, want ice cream, here's the rock salt. But there is code available.
Is that what programmers say? Here's the rock salt.
That's what Matt Howie said about my Twitalytic program. He said, I hate it when I click on links and wind up on GitHub. It's like saying, want ice cream? Here's the rock salt.
That's good. That's a good line.
Yeah, so there's rock salt there for a drop, it looks like.
Love that.
They were really close to that Mac version, and then, you know, now the Google and Apple hate each other. It's probably a bit slower coming along.
Wasn't it Larry or... Oh, no, it was Eric Schmidt was apologizing and saying how bad he felt that the Mac version was so far behind.
Yeah.
I feel really bad.
But don't worry, there'll be a version for Chrome OS.
How hard could it be? Come on, how hard could it be, really?
Apparently more than a year's worth of hard.
How? I don't get it.
And the developer build is pretty stable. The one that's available. It's pretty stable. I've been using it with Wave on my Mac, and it's you know, it's got a couple of little things that need to be fixed, but it's pretty good right now.
No, I've been using it. It's fine. I just don't get it. What? Anyway, that's why I wanted Windows 7 so I could run Chrome, and I wanted Chrome so I could run Wave, and now I'd have no idea why I wanted Wave. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're going to Windows 7, you know the most important thing to do is to back up. You got it. Back up first. Anytime you're upgrading or making a change, you are backing up. Of course, you're backing up all the time. You wouldn't dream of having a computer. What? You're not always. Oh, my goodness. We've got to do something about that. It's time to get yourself a copy of Carbonite. Carbonite.com. It's backup done right, and I'll tell you why. It does it automatically, so you don't have to think about it. See, that's one of the problems with backup. There's two that I can see. One is nobody does it. You just, because it's a pain, so you forget, so you don't do it. So Carbonite handles that by just doing it in the background all the time. Once you install Carbonite and identify those precious files, the emails, the photos, the music, the things you can't afford to lose, it just says, okay, fine, I'll take it from here. It backs it up. backs it up to the cloud. See, that's the second problem. The second problem is people might be backing up, but they back up to a hard drive right next to their computer. What happens if the worst happens? A fire, a flood, a tornado, and your house blows over, it goes to Kansas, and then you've lost a backup's the same as you've lost your computer. That's no good. To have a backup, a true backup, you need to get it off-site. You need to get it away from the originals. Carbonite does that. It uploads your backups, encrypts them with a 128-bit AES, I'm sorry, encrypts them. Then, using SSL, so it's encrypted again, it sends it up to the Carbonite servers where it stays safe and sound till you need it. You can access it anytime from any computer by logging into your Carbonite account, or if it's time for a restore, just a couple clicks of the mouse and boom, you download that file. Now, here's the best part. It backs up all these files, the photo, the music, the emails, the financial records, the office documents. It backs an unlimited amount for less than $5 a month. For $54.95 a year, back up as much as you want. As long as it's on your computer, you can back it up. You don't have to think about it. There's no second tier or anything. Mac and PC, try it free right now. Go to carbonite.com, CARBONITE.com, and use a coupon code TWIT. Now, here's what's going to happen, by the way. I want you to sign up for the free trial. Even if you know you want this, I'm gonna fix that coupon code. I have the wrong one there. Even if you know you want this, I want you to sign up for the free trial. Because even if you use this free trial for just 1 or 2 days, when you then sign up for Carbonite, you'll get 2 months free. So it's worth it. Just always a good idea to try it. Make sure it works. Make sure you understand how it works. You're comfortable with it. And there's no cost. You don't even need a credit card. Does require an Intel Mac. So I know I get emails sometimes. People say, I have an old PowerPC Mac. No, I'm sorry. It won't work on that. But it does work on all the Intel Macs, and it also works on Windows, and you're going to love it. CARBONITE. Carbonite is backup done right. So we do a little thing, Danny, every week. Gina has a tip. Jeff has a number. I have a tool. And then we get our wish list. Anything you wish for. You know, having to do with the cloud. It's not like a puppy or something. So we'll get to that, and we'll give you a chance to have your wish, but let's start with Gina's tool of the week.
My tip this week is a new feature that rolled out in Google Reader, which is pretty cool. If you click on any subscription or any folder full of subscriptions, you can now sort it by, I think, from the folder settings button, choose the sort by magic option.
Ooh,
so you
can sort I love by magic. Newest.
Yeah, I love magic. Who doesn't love magic? You can sort by newest, sort by oldest, and now you can sort by magic. And magic is Google's algorithm, Google Reader tracks your behavior and what items you've been looking at and what items you like and which items you share and comment on. It takes that data and tries to figure out what items are would be most interesting to you. So sort by magic. It's kind of awesome because if you want to just hit your feed reader for just a few minutes and just see what the most important stuff. And in fact, I tried it this week and I tried it earlier today when I was researching stories for this show, and it did really well. It suggested items that I was certainly interested in. Now, in the blog post, they said that this data is based on the things that you share and like in Google Reader. So if you're using those options, which I am, you'll get better data. So I don't think it's just what you look at, but it's a lot like Flickr's interestingness on photos, except that it's based on your behavior, not what other people have done. But I think it might even look at what things that your friends have liked as well in Reader. But it's pretty cool. It is indeed magic. It was good for me. I'd be interested to see, Leo, what you think if it turns up interesting items for you if you give it a try.
So show me how to do this again. I'm going to go to where?
Click on a folder or click on any subscription, and then in the folder settings button at the top.
Okay. I can say sort by newest, oldest, sort by magic, and it somehow knows that
it reorders
is what I would be most interested in.
Yeah, in terms of what you might think is relevant.
Google Chrome themes video uses some YouTube magic to make a lasting impression. See, I would be interested in that. Look at that.
There you go. My top hits were pretty good too.
Wow, that's neat.
It works really well in folders, especially, I think, when you have lots of subscriptions.
Yeah.
I use,
there's two different services, FeedHub and 8RSS, that will give me kind of a hot stuff, hot articles based on the number of clicks and so forth.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, here's my 8RSS top stories. In Japan, nerds control girls with joysticks. But that, no. So that's the newest. Now let's sort by magic. I think that's
like what it knows about you, Lou.
Yeah. No, top ten entrepreneurs to watch. See, that's neat. That's really cool. I don't know why.
So Gina, is this, dare I say it one more time and get in more trouble? This feeds into what we were talking about with Raindrop and the algorithmic guessing and the news stream, right?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly hadn't made the connection, but yeah, it is. It's based on your behavior and what you've expressed interest about, your gestures with on data. It's making suggestions, smart suggestions.
So, the ultimate Google wish for the world is to know your intent.
Right.
Right.
So they can
exactly.
sell it.
The more knows your intent, the more can do that.
So they can sell it. If you, if I knew you intended to buy a Ford F-150 pickup, I'd be rich.
Mm-hmm.
And now our number of the week for Mr. Jeffrey Jarvis.
2 million. I found it interesting that that's the number of businesses Google bragged on its official blog are now using Google apps in the enterprise with 20 million users, 100 countries, 40 languages. Okay, I got the sales. But what really interested me was that they then have a commercial. We don't see commercials from Google. Yahoo spends $200 million to put commercials up. Google doesn't put commercials up. They have a new commercial campaign called Go Google that they're putting in airports and all around.
I've seen billboards in Silicon Valley.
Exactly. They're bragging about all the companies that are going apps. And so then it all made sense because a few days later I saw a link that Eric Schmidt says that enterprise is the next big opportunity for Google. And it's going to be a different business model. That they don't think that ad-supported enterprise stuff will work terribly well. And so they're going to charge people for stuff. Hmm. And their price point is lower than everybody else's, like guess who?
Yeah.
And so Google's now starting to pitch into enterprise, saying that they already have a huge base of 2 million enterprises to begin.
And they're trying to get Google Apps primarily right in there. That's the wedge anyway. And that ties into my tool of the week, which is something Gina and I have talked about before. In fact, when we first talked about this show, she said, okay, it could be about Google, but make sure it's about cloud so I could talk about Zoho Apps.
Mm-hmm.
And Zoho apps are fantastic. And now even more Googly. This is basically like Google Apps on steroids. I mean, they have the basic apps, but they also have, Wiki.
67 more.
Yeah. Is it that how many?
It just goes on and on.
There's CRM. There's discussions. There's online web conferencing. There's invoicing, project management. I mean, it just goes on. And this is the new feature. You can use your Google Apps login. So if you have one of those corporate Google Apps accounts, you can integrate this in, even import and export, share Google Apps documents. So it really is nice to have that kind of interface to Zoho. Now, when you have a choice, Gina, will you choose sometimes to use Zoho Office instead of Google?
You know, I haven't switched to Zoho just because of just like inertia, momentum, you know, I'm just used to using Google tools. But every time I look at Zoho, which is pretty often because they're often rolling out new stuff and they send
That's
us press
amazing.
Releases at Lifehacker, I look at it and go, this is just great. I mean, it's just a matter of like habit and what I'm used to and you know, just wanting to kind of keep up with what Google's doing. So I haven't made the switch and I actually feel kind of ashamed to say that because it really is it's a fantastic product. And now that they have the Google sign in for both a vanilla account and a Google Apps account, it's really, they're doing everything they can to lower the barriers for people.
I thought maybe this would be a fun thing to use for our business. We use Google Apps very heavily to share, projects, ideas, and so forth. I thought because of the integration, I could do this. I was able to set up a Twit, account with a Twit logo and share it and so forth and have shared email and stuff. So I think that there's...
And how do you like it?
That's very impressive. You know, I have to say I'm kind of prejudiced towards Google because I know they're going to be around.
Well, yeah, there's that.
You know, and I'm sure, I mean, Zoho has a financial model that makes a lot of sense and, it works really well. For instance, they don't have a project planner on Google, so I'm using the project planner for some projects of ours. It makes sense, especially in the areas where Google doesn't have a tool.
Right.
Certainly worth taking a look at, especially, as you say, now that there's a Google login. And finally, we'll wrap up with our wish lists. Danny, have you thought of anything you wish would come true in the world of Google?
Yeah, it's not so much from Google. It's probably the newspapers that are poking at Google. I felt like this week we'd reached this new low point in this debate when the the Wall Street Journal managing editor had suggested that Google was causing people to be promiscuous online.
And oh, great.
Somehow,
you mean sexually promiscuous or news promiscuous?
Promiscuous to sources.
Oh, okay.
We're being news sluts when we go to Google, and we think that we should just...
You ignorant news sluts.
I know.
Oh, my God.
I felt so dirty. And,
that's horrible. So,
but no, but this was, I mean, it came up at the Web 2.0 conference, and there were a number of slams like that, and I just kind of felt like this was from the same person that was also saying that, you know, they felt like we needed to have a rational debate about professional journalism, where we go. And I'm thinking, yeah, I think that we could use rational debate, or actually we could just use a more rational discussion of what solutions are. And what I tend to hear from the industry poking at Google is just a lot of complaints and not a lot of solutions. Other than,
welcome to
you
my
know,
life, Danny. This is what I live with every time. There was a really great post you wrote in response to Robert Thompson of the Journal, and I tweeted it. And it was yeah, what he says.
Well, and thank you. I would love for you and I and everybody else to be able to get past having to debunk the charges and just start talking about the solutions. And one of the things is like, you know, I'm not a Google fanboy. I just like to have balance. And when I watched that thing, I thought there was no balance and there wasn't anything reasonable. I for the life of me, I still can't figure out what the Wall Street Journal seems to want, because they had everything that
they wanted.
Well, it's really that simple, I think. I was talking to somebody who used to work with Google about just this topic this week, and I think the newspapers don't want a friend. And it was Google's mistake to think that they could befriend them. And instead, the newspapers want someone to blame because they effed up. They've had 15 years since commercial browser came out 15 years ago this month, and they haven't done jack because they protected their old world. And, yeah, you know, I've been trying to work with them, and, you know, I want to see them advance in the future, and some people are getting smart, and the New York Times is doing good things, and so on and so forth. And Martin Nissenholtz defended Google and said, welcome to competition, the executive of the New York Times who's in charge of digital. But you're right, Danny. All it is whining and mewling and moaning and mourning and no constructive sense of how to move forward.
Well, and so that's my wish. I want that constructive thing. I want the specifics. I don't want any more of the rhetoric. I want to know exactly what it is that you want so that we can actually go forward, because I think enough time has been wasted on the accusations that go. And, you know, I'd like to see that. I think there are things that can happen. I think there are places where Google definitely needs to be called on and held up. But when they do that, I want them to stand up when they do it. And most of the time, I just don't see the stuff standing up. So I wish I could be more positive about that.
No, that's why I call it the wine, not the wish.
You're right.
If it could be the wine, it was a good wine.
All right, well, go
Give
ahead.
Give me more time, I'll come up with a wine against Google itself. It's
no, that's fine.
Hard.
I think that's a very good one. That's a very good one. I think that's appropriate. Jeff Jarvis.
Well, the good news half of this is that Google worked out a deal with Virgin to provide free Wi-Fi access on planes across the country. That's the good news. Now my wine. Would you stop saying, gee, you won't believe it, I'm in an airplane and I'm online. Enough. I'm fed up.
Enough tweets. We got
How
it.
How long did it take after you got I've a cell phone to say, you won't believe where I'm calling from. Okay, you can tweet from the air. We know it. Stop.
All right, I did it once in it was about 5 years ago on SAS, and I'll never do it again. I apologize.
I think 5 years ago it was probably okay.
It was pretty unusual then.
It was unusual then. Yeah. I have yet to have Wi-Fi on a plane, and when I do, I will absolutely tweet that I have, and I'm going to annoy Jeff.
I'm on a plane. How long before Saturday Night Live does a parody song? I'm on a plane.
Well, I wonder whether those pilots were too busy tweeting, and that's why they missed their destination this week.
What happened? They oversailed it. They flew
over 150 miles. Yeah.
Whoopsies.
Yeah. Oops.
Oopsies. You know, air traffic controllers think all pilots are idiots. They just wish they'd leave it on autopilot the whole way. Just let us bring you in. I talked to a pilot when I was on Emirates flying to Dubai as a fan. Hi, Bruno. And he told me, it was really interesting. You know, he flies the A380, which is the big Airbus. And he said, it's fly-by-wire. You know, in the old days, you'd feel the rudders, you'd feel movement, you'd feel shake. And, of course, they simulate that so that you know what's going on with the plane. But really, it's a joystick. It's electronic. There's no feedback. There's no force feedback from the actual wing. And United pilots complained. I think it was on the 777 they complained. because they didn't have to do trim anymore. The plane trimmed, did all the trim. So Boeing, in order to continue to sell airplanes to United, put a fake trim button on, wow, on the joystick. It doesn't do anything, but you have to press it. And Bruno says, all the pilots, all the rest of the pilots hate the United pilots because they're such old farts. They needed a trim button. And now everybody's got to press the button, even though it does nothing.
You know, like the whole, you know, autopilot thing, that's where automation scares me. You know, it's like when the guy who's flying me from San Diego to New York is just kind of sitting there, you know, watching things happen automatically, that makes me nervous. I want him or her to be a lot more engaged.
Well, Bruno listens to all our podcasts because he says there's nothing to do. He says,
yeah, a friend of mine is a pilot. Yeah, she says the same thing.
Itself.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
And does a better job, I think, in most cases than the pilot would.
Frightening.
It's only a matter of time. You know, already cars, the new Prius has this avoidance detection. If you veer out of your lane, it tightens your seatbelt, improves the braking, it beeps at you. It's just a matter of time before they drive themselves. Gina, do you have a wish list item?
My wish, I'm gonna shamelessly steal Danny's idea, and based on Raindrop and the Google Reader sort by magic, I want a sort by magic button in my Gmail.
Yeah. So that your mom's mail always goes to the top, right?
Yep, exactly.
Because I miss mom's mail all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Good thinking. I think everything by magic. We should
everything.
Want magic everywhere.
Except my planes.
Yeah, that's a little different.
We need
fly
a
by magic.
That's everything be by magic.
Say magically. Again? What?
We just need a button that will automatically make everything automatically by magic.
Yeah.
We had a button for that, so we'll get to it.
Yeah, just one button that does it all. I don't know. My only wish is that the Droid phone comes out soon, because I can't wait to get my my hands on one of them. I really hope that developers will not abandon Android. I know that, you know, it upset them when Google shut down the third-party ROMs, but I think it's our last best hope to providing some competition to the Apple Store.
My concern, though, is, you know, I was with Verizon for a long time, and when I lived in the UK and I lived in the US, and I came to the US a lot, and I had two phones, and I had a phone in the UK that would have been perfectly fine to use on Verizon if it could have taken a SIM card, but they're CDMA, right, and right, they're GSM. So I want to, if that phone comes out, the one thing it probably don't do is let me take it to another provider down the line if I want to. I'm going to buy this phone that's going to be a brick if I ever decide I want to leave Verizon. And the reality is, you know, every year or so I'm dumping my phone, sadly, anyway, right? But still, is it going to let me work on a GSM network if I wanted to?
The phone handset is the Motorola Shoals, and there is a GSM UMTS version of the Shoals. So that's an interesting question. I mean, Verizon may not sell it to you, but there will be that Motorola phone will be there will be a world edition. You know, Verizon does sell some phones that have, you know, both GSM and CDMA.
Yeah.
They need to do that. It's a real problem for Verizon and Sprint customers is they can't travel.
Yeah.
They're kind of just stuck. You may not leave. Hey, Danny, it's been really great having you on. Please come back and join us again. Danny Sullivan is the man in charge of searchengineland.com. You are in charge. I'm not giving you a promotion, am I?
No, yes, I am.
The man to blame, so to speak, for searchengineland.com. Yep. All right. Search Engine Land. I did it. I'm almost made it all the way through the show. searchengineland.com. Thank you, Danny, for being here. We really appreciate it.
It's a pleasure being here.
Great site. As you can tell, we quote from it all the time on this show, so it seemed only appropriate to have you on. Jeff Jarvis is at buzzmachine.com and a regular on this show. Great to have you again, Jeff. We'll let you get to your pizza night.
Thank you. Glad to be here as always.
And Gina Trapani, the great Gina Trapani at smarterware.org.
Thanks, Leo and Jeff and Danny. It was a great show today.
Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google.